So I got this tweet from a dude named Can I Borrow a Dollar, which is cool.
No.
He said, my concern is if the Commander starters got enough quality work in training camp, joint practices, and preseason games.
And I think that's fair. Because we have fans who always tell, I hear them all the time, well, you don't want people to get hurt. But then later on, well, man, we starting slow. You can't have your cake and eat it too. But I tell you one thing, Pat Mahomes plays every preseason. I don't think Aaron Rodgers has played much in preseason. Josh Allen don't play much.
Lamar hasn't played in four years, I heard.
Pat plays all the time. If Pat plays and they've been as winning as much as they have, I'm just going to say, I'm going to keep leaning to that side. But you get the right to do what you want to do. But once the season starts, you better hit the ground running.
One thing that changes a lot for me, I think you got to get some work. Just like face the speed of football.
Yeah.
Right?
Get ready for football by playing football.
That said, I mean, dude, Mahomes threw 13 passes in the third preseason game.
Yeah.
It tells you a lot. But I do think the old system, when they had four preseason games, that last preseason game was about 8 days before week one.
Yeah.
And it was just before the final cuts.
Yeah.
So it was vital. Now,
that last preseason game, nobody played in it. People played in the third preseason game. So it's very similar to what goes on now.
I wonder if the coaches now look at that two-week gap and they're like, playing today is not going to impact 2 weeks from now. That's why they go in the second one, if they go at all, most of the league.
Yeah, but then that's 3 weeks ahead, away from the season.
Totally.
You know, I think that the more the front offices and the analytical people have gotten involved, it's more about what they think and not necessarily what it is about football.
I think they could have given Jaden another drive in the Bengals game.
Easily.
It wouldn't have been awful to see him throw a pass.
Yeah.
But
easily.
I think when he ran for that touchdown, people are like, yo, get him out. Get him out. I am not overly concerned that they didn't get enough work. I guess we'll find out, right?
I watched him in practice and I was impressed with how much work they get. It's never going to get to the intensity how it was back in the day. But the amount of plays that they get off in practice is amazing. And I think that's the way that they play. You know, so some level of that is getting you where you want to go. But I'm always concerned about the physicality. Early on.
To that end, I think it's a bigger loss that they lost that Ravens joint practice than necessarily starters getting more preseason work, like playing in game three or something. I think that joint practice against Baltimore would have had more value.
Yeah, because more of the starters would have played, and that's a team that you, listen, whether you like them or not, they come and they play physical. They play physical. And I think it's great work for your team.
As for our AAA poll question of the day, are you concerned about the record? The only thing I'd like to point out to you, Brian, the Browns went undefeated this preseason.
Yeah.
Draw your own conclusions about the record in the preseason. all right, I want to hit these phones, man. Start with Lewis. Lewis, are you concerned how the preseason ended?
No, not one bit. There are three meaningless games, and the last thing I want to do is see somebody get hurt. I mean, I can understand if you have maybe a new quarterback, offensive line, and you have to do a lot of 11 evaluating, and if your team clicked. But if you already have a good 11 and on offense and defense and or okay, and you wanted to kind of rest or keep your veterans from getting hurt, nope, I don't care less. If you lost 100-0, I wouldn't care less. The only game I cared about was that two and first quarter.
Yeah. Right. Appreciate the call, Lou.
The question I always ask, though, when you hear people say that, well, you don't want nobody to get hurt. They can get hurt the first play of the regular season game. And the question I ask, does that make it any different? You know what I mean? Whether it's the preseason or they get hurt in the first game, first play of the regular season, does it really make that big of a difference? Injuries happen in football, okay? And that's why you got to prepare everybody. Remember, I used to always say, prepare 53, not just the 22.
Totally.
And eventually someone else is going to have to play. I don't think no starting 22 that starts plays the whole season. I don't think it ever happened.
Never. Jim is in Manassas. Jim, you worried by the preseason?
B. McFinley, Aquarium Boys, how's everybody doing
What's
on
up,
this
Jim?
Monday?
We're good, bud.
Well, first off, I want to thank all of you for your coverage on the team, your humor, your insight, your wisdom based off of how long you guys have been around. It's really, really helpful, so I appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
I'm not concerned, to be honest. The people we're seeing out there in the preseason were third, fourth, fifth stringers. If it gets to the point in the season where we have to rely on such players, then the season's already a wash. So I'm not concerned. In terms of a slow start, at least for the offense, I'm not concerned about that based off of the one drive we saw in the Bengals game. That really like alleviates a lot of the worries. It's more so players that I'm concerned, certain players that I'm concerned about slow starts. I mean, Sam Cosmi, it's a given with his injury. And then Terry, simply because he hasn't been practicing. One thing on Terry before I get off the air, because I know there's a lot of calls, but you know, when he was there on Saturday, I know, you know, people thought that would be a good thing for him to show his face around the team. But based off the reaction I've seen on Twitter, like, it's kind of breaking my heart to see how many people are just, like, turning on Terry. I just kind of understand that's the business of the game. So what vibe, what sort of sense did he get from Terry as he was in the stadium? Well, I'll take it off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, Jim. I appreciate you. Specific to Terry.
Listen, man, I don't need no vibe. First of all, people are sitting there talking about his body language, how he was looking.
I got a lot of body
language. Man, get over all that crap. What you want me to do? Did you watch the game on Saturday? Who was walking around there with great body language? I was in the booth and didn't have damn great body language. I guarantee that.
Yeah, I think the body language experts got to chill with McLaurin. There was a difference. Like, if you watched Revo at all, he's just like this constant ball of energy flying around and trying to coach up young guys. That's just not
That's who he is.
Yeah. Like, Terry's more reserved, especially. Listen, man, if this is week 12 and it's a game that matters, Terry's going to be. Week 12 is a bye week. Week 13, home against Denver, Sunday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense has a big third down. Terry's going to be standing on the bench waving his arms.
Yeah.
But it was August 23rd. Like, I don't think Terry's sideline behavior
the people
should be reflective
who
of anything.
Are making those comments are the same people who are saying they don't want people to get hurt. They don't, and the preseason don't mean anything. So why does that mean so much for him then? And don't compare a person who's normally low-key to a person who's very jovial. Revo is jovial as hell. Gonna always be that way. Jaden is jovial as hell. Gonna always be that way. Other guys won't be. So, I mean, and if I'm dealing with something personal with the team, I have a right to have my feelings. Why do I have to run around being happy just to please somebody else? It's annoying, man.
We'll take another call here. Our guy Rusty is in Delaware. Rusty, what up?
Morning, boys. I'll tell you, it is annoying, Brian, but it's not as annoying as listening to Terry talk every single day. I will be so glad when this stuff is over. Not worried about the preseason. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's not a good look when your backups go out there and lay an egg. But I do believe that the practice time is more valuable in this current setup. And I do kind of have a question. Once we end up going to an 18-game schedule, How's the preseason even going to look?
It's going to look just like
early.
They look right now in college football. Practice and
right.
start
so
playing.
If everything is designed basically for the league to start slow, that's kind of how it has become. People are going to have their hands all in a bunch when these guys come out and lay eggs in two preseason games.
The fact that
I worry about week one and the real games.
The fact that people do not practice anyway and players don't play, I figure go right to the way it used to be, like it is in college. Hell, in college football, you see who Texas is playing Ohio State first game, right?
Yeah.
They haven't played any preseason games. I think since preseason means nothing to everybody, why the hell play them? Just go play the regular season game. Because I know the people that's paying for the tickets have a problem with how much they got to pay for a preseason game when no stars out there.
Amen.
Thanks for the call, Rusty. You think when they go to 18 that they'll just drop the preseason altogether?
No, they're not going to drop it because it's a money-making thing for the league. But should they drop it? Yes. Since it doesn't matter, no one thinks it matters. So why play it?
It's a fair question. I don't want to get too down in the weeds on Terry. If people are concerned about Terry, I'm not. I know the dude pretty well.
I'll just say if Terry's on the football field, I'll go to war with him every day.
Agree with that.
Because I know how he's going to battle.
I got a real question for you, B. I understand wanting to keep three quarterbacks. I'm not trying to be overly critical because I know these guys and they're nice people, right? But I've said this since I saw him day one. Me and Fortier used to argue about this. I don't think Hartman has the arm to throw the out in the pros. Like, he has two pick sixes.
But he has to be
a lot faster.
Much more in tune and let it go sooner because that ball he threw for that left hash back to that sideline. Ball was thrown so late, and it was late and inside. If it's late and outside, you won't have a problem.
Jeff could pick that off. I don't – like, for all the people – I think if Mariota was healthy this preseason, everything looks a lot different. I think it was tough to gather a lot of – now, DQ was asked that, if it's hard to – is it hard to get an evaluation – based on the quarterback play, and he said no, and that the team is able to still watch a bunch of the tape and have different conclusions. It definitely makes it a little more challenging.
Yeah, it does. And see what concerns me more, it's not who didn't play. It's the guys that got to work with that mediocre play that never gave them a chance to really show what they were about. You know what I'm saying? So you hate to be your decision is going to be based off of what somebody else had to do, and they didn't do their job at a high level. You know what I'm saying?
DQ asked if he could evaluate the receivers based on the quarterback play. Said you really have to look at it from the receiver spot. Where was the route? Like, for instance, there was a time last week when Luke absolutely got on top of somebody on a deep route. Now, we didn't throw it that way, and so maybe we didn't take the attempt to him, but you felt the speed of him absolutely. Going forward, I would say it's, are you in the right spot doing the right route? And if the ball doesn't go your way, I think it's more difficult than if you were getting covered. You got beat and the ball wasn't able to go your way because of getting guarded in that way. So it is a good question. I don't think it hampers the receiver unless there was an errant throw or a decision not to go to the correct read. I think he took the high road of saying, yeah, it's a bit of an issue, but we're still watching the tape and know what these guys are doing, even if they're not getting the ball.
Yeah.
If you're going to keep four tight ends, and I think they will, and you're going to keep four backs, and I think they will, did Hartman, I definitely don't think Hartman, I don't even think Johnson forced his way to have to be on this first 53. And I don't. Honestly, I don't really have any concern that you can get Hartman back to your practice squad if that's what you want. I don't have a ton of concern that you lose Josh Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He was available halfway through the year last year.
He was. But if you got three people, if you got those people out there competing, Johnson won the competition.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's be real about that. But it comes down to what you want to do and how you want to feel. And what I'm more concerned about, will 18, is his number 18, Mariota?
Yeah.
When the season starts, is he going to be healthy and on the sideline?
He told
us. Because he has proven to me that he can go up and handle his business.
He told us the other day, he talked the last practice, Thursday. He's dealing with ankle Achilles tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
He really appreciates that the team's given him the time to rest and recover and rehab. Said he hates rehab. It's super boring. He's just walking on a treadmill. And he said, he's like, you know, in my role, it's a little different. But if my number was to get called week one, I think I'll be good to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marcus is a veteran player. I tend to trust him. I think DQ and the medical and the training operation have earned that trust to handle guys the right way.
Yeah.
And the fact that Jeff Driscoll is now available, and he was your third quarterback last year, I almost wonder if you try to get him back. I thought Driscoll looked better in his work in the preseason and camp last year than necessarily what we've seen either years, either guys this year. I like Josh Johnson. If you get in a situation where you got to play Josh Johnson, he's, you know, he's a third string quarterback, but he's capable of it. I don't think we have to worry too much about Sam Hartman. And I think if you're going to go four tight ends, four backs, assuming you go six wideouts, I'm curious who your sixth wideout would be.
I'm going to be honest with you, man. Brooks, 16?
Yeah. That's where I'd go.
He to me, has done enough to be on the roster.
Well, and I wonder, with a talented rookie, undrafted guy like Brooks, I don't know that he'd get claimed, but I think if I was running a different team, I'd be more interested in claiming an undrafted rookie wide receiver that could maybe continue to develop over time with some physical skills than a 39-year-old journeyman quarterback or a second-year quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, if you're concerned making these roster decisions, who am I going to lose if I cut them? Who will I not be able to get back to my practice squad? I think Brooks is a way bigger target league-wide than either Hartman or Johnson.
More than likely.
Right? Like, yeah. So if you're going to go four backs, four tight ends, six wideouts, that's 14. You're going to keep 9 O-linemen?
Yeah.
Maybe that becomes 8 if you put Cosby on IR, give yourself a little wiggle room.
Mm-hmm. Little chance to play with it.
But, like, if you want to keep 9 O-linemen, 14 plus 9 is 23, right? Only room for 2 quarterbacks, unless you're going to go with an uneven balance. And maybe you can do that.
And they normally have. They've been going 2 quarterbacks, 1 on the practice squad.
Last year, they kept Driscoll on the active.
Yeah, so.
And then Hartman on the practice squad.
Junks are brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next 5-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com and you can join their team. You can do that today. You can join us at 800-636-1067. Are you excited that the Terry saga is finally behind us? Now it's no more, well, Buddy Baker's an idiot. Terry needs to get back to work.
Mm-hmm.
The team needs to budge off of their number.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's finally done. Now we can laser focus in on Giants Commanders week 1. Jaden's top weapon is in the mix with Terry McLaurin. Now you don't have to worry about, you know, Noah Brown trying to catch 50 balls in an offense and him staying healthy. The alpha wideout is back.
Well, just for the record, I always thought he was going to be available for week 1. I didn't think he was going to sit out and miss game checks.
That seemed preposterous.
But now the fact that you can now start focusing on, all right, the roster, because they're going to have the cuts today, depth chart, the offense, the Giants, you know, different things rather than when's he going to sign, when's he going to start practicing.
Well, now you can start really looking at it. Yeah. And let's look at what they did last year. So we know offensively, defensively, that was kind of the issue. That was what kind of killed them.
Especially stopping the run.
Remains to be seen how we'll do this year. I hope we do better if we want to have any shot. But offensively, we all know they averaged 28.5 points per game. But what is kind of interesting about it is it was really largely led by their rushing attack with Jaden, B-Rob, and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. They finished, fifth?
They were third.
Third in the league in rushing.
Third in the NFL in terms of yards per game, okay, right? The Ravens were one. The Eagles and their tush push and Jalen Hurts and everybody and Saquon, obviously, they were two. And then we were kind of a distant third.
All three teams had running quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
That's really well, what that's, takes you to the top of the league at this
code.
Point.
That's, right, but yeah, you can't right. take that out. I mean, that's part of it.
That's a cheat code,
that's
for sure.
That's part of it.
But they, you know, but the Ravens, with that running quarterback and Derrick Henry, is lethal. And I said at the moment they signed him.
You can't undersell enough how unbelievable it is to have a running quarterback that's going to run for 900 yards.
Right.
How many touchdowns did Jaden have last year?
Running?
Yeah, six or seven, whatever it was.
I think it was seven, but I'll double check that.
But when you have a running quarterback that's going to give you almost 1,000 yards, that's massive.
It is massive. But here's what I wanted to get to. What you kind of don't realize and lost in it because they were so freaking good at everything else is they were only 17th in the NFL in passing.
Yeah.
So now you got Terry. Let's just assume Terry's still at the peak of his powers. All right. You got the improved offensive line. Mm-hmm. You've added Debo. But people are actually saying Zach Ertz looks quicker than he did last year.
That would be great if that's the case. He had six rushing touchdowns rookie.
Right. So there is I'm not sure there's too much more room for growth in the on the ground game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, how much better could you do than third in the NFL in rushing? I mean, maybe you could do slightly better, but I don't think the Ravens are going to drop off. Well, especially the Eagles are going to particularly drop off.
I don't think they're going to be third.
The running back room's in flux, too.
Yeah, the running back room's a little bit in flux.
Because like you said, B-Rob, he added a nice number.
But there is room for growth in the passing game. And we know that certainly early on in the season, they were kind of slow feeding Jaden as he got comfortable. And largely, a lot of his spectacular plays were with his legs. But I actually think the sky's the limit offensively with them. There's no reason why they can't.
The passing game should be better.
The passing game should be better, and that they can't improve upon the 28.5.
And he will be passing more if the defense isn't markedly better. If the defense doesn't take a big leap, he's going to have to pass more to keep the team
downside to that
and in
is,
games.
As I can't remember who we had on yesterday pointed out, if the defense is terrible and teams are just having the ball for 7-8 minutes at a time.
Yeah, they're not on the field.
Then we're not on the field as much.
Okay. I mean, that impacts the offense too, but
right.
I mean, if the defense is poor again,
well, then you're playing from behind.
Then it's shootouts.
Yeah.
It's high-scoring affairs.
Right. But assuming they improve a little bit on defense, which I think they should be better. The back end is certainly better. Hopefully the front seven's at a minimum equal, if not better, than last year. There is room for growth in the passing game, and I think that Jaden should develop a little more as a passer.
As a fan, the first month of the season, Giants, Packers on the road, short week, by the way.
Yeah.
Raiders here, and then at Atlanta.
3-1.
What are you?
Obviously
you want to win every game, but that's impossible.
I think I had him going like 3-1. I'm a little nervous now.
But are you okay with 2-2, or are you disappointed with 2-2?
Disappointed.
All right. So you want 3-1.
I think you're
kind
of disappointed because of the opponents.
Just because of the Giants and Raiders at home.
The Raiders should finish last in their division.
Yeah.
The Falcons, they're
Raiders
a work
are
in progress.
Better than last year.
Falcons are going to be a tough out, man, down there.
They'll be able to score, but I think the Commanders are better.
And the Packers are a tough out.
And I think the Giants, I feel, is a must win at week one at home.
Yeah.
You can't start the season by losing to the team that everybody is picking to finish last in the NFC East.
But the Raiders, I think the Raiders are going to be better because they got a good coach. All right.
They do. They've got a
much better quarterback.
Do you see them leapfrogging any of the other teams in that division?
No, I'm just talking about that.
Who cares what they do?
I'm just talking about that particular matchup.
Sure. They're going to be a tougher out than you thought.
Now it is a home game, but you've got a stud, what we think is going to be a stud rookie running back.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they've got maybe the best tight end.
Right.
And they've got a much better quarterback. That's going to be a tough out. I'm not saying they're going to beat Washington.
Not saying it's a pushover, but it should be.
So it doesn't look as easy that first month as it probably did. You know,
I agree.
A few months ago,
but I'm encouraged that Terry's going to be back and have basically a good two full weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I assume he's in shape to kind of get in football shape and be ready to go, and hopefully we can hit the ground running at basically full strength offensively, which wasn't certain that was going to be the case.
They just did a segment on ESPN about it, and they showed the analytics. The analytics just to win the NFC East, I believe, are over 50% for the Eagles, but the Commanders are not that far off at 35%. And keep it simple, right? You're talking about the passing game can get better. the passing game should be better because they added Debo. Just that addition.
Well, Debo and the offensive
line. Of course, all of that. But yeah. Just simply adding Debo, giving him another weapon, is huge.
I agree. Yeah. And I think if Eckler can stay upright and avoid the concussion bugaboo, he'll catch a lot of balls in the offense. That's just what he does. And I think that's what they want him to specialize in. Let Krosky Merritt and Rodriguez be the battering rams. Use him more in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is he's explosive. We've seen it. Even at this age, he's explosive.
It's kind of shocking. Like, okay, we know that Detroit's been prolific scoring mm-hmm. the last couple of years, right? 33.2. We know the Bills have been prolific. They're averaging 30.9. The Ravens, right, with their offense. Kind of shocking the Buccaneers are right up there at 29.5.
It's not that shocking with Baker Mayfield and the weapons he has.
I mean, Liam Cole.
Baker shocking to me.
Do you know how many touchdown passes Baker had last year?
35.
41.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to me.
I expect them to take a step back because Liam Cohen left. Chris Godwin is going to start on the PUP list.
Yeah, but didn't they draft the kid from...
Well, there's been a lot of raving about Emeka Egbuka. Yeah, just stepping in.
Yeah, he could step in right and give you 8 to 10 touchdowns.
And Bucky Irving was really good last year at running back.
I mean, maybe he doesn't have 41. They're going to be a scoring team.
Yeah.
Put it this way. I always assumed that Terry would be there week one because he wouldn't want to miss a game check, mm-hmm. right? It's $1 million a week. He didn't even want to miss the $50,000 a day.
No.
Fine. Why would he want to miss $1 million? That wasn't going to be a thing. But I wasn't certain when he'd report, like, mm-hmm. or actually practice. Now I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident in this Giants game, which I think is going to be an improved Giants team. I think it's going to be improved. It may not.
I think they're better than last year.
They're going to be a tougher out.
Yes.
Week in and week out. I have no idea how many wins they're going to have.
Washington had a tough game with them last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Neighbors doesn't drop that ball, that's an L, right?
Probably. Their kicker was out.
Their kicker was a disaster.
So they had to go for two on everything.
Yeah.
I mean, what poor planning by Dable. He knew his kicker was banged up heading into the game. Didn't have a backup plan.
Yeah.
I just think their defense is going to be much better because of, I mean, Burns is a stud, but adding Carter, I mean,
Thibodeau's still there. I mean,
they're going to be good.
They can wreak havoc on the passer.
I'm not saying they're going to be the playoff team. Some people say they got an outside shot, but quarterback's still an issue. I just think defensively they're going to be an issue. They're going to be a tough out.
I'll be honest. If they lose week one at home to the Giants, that's an embarrassing way to start the season, in my opinion. It's bad optics on the Commanders if you drop a game to the bottom feeder in your division.
It just shows you it's going to be a tough season. Like, every week is going to be a dogfight.
Sure.
You know.
But that's a game that you have to start the season off on the right foot. You got to win that game.
Yeah, but Washington's heavily favored.
I know, 6.5-point favorites.
Even though you just saw Jaden for one drive, didn't it make you feel confident that if he's on the field, they're going to be just fine?
Yes.
When he's healthy, I think anything's possible. He really is just a
basically,
remarkable
against
player.
Any defense, I expect them to go out and put up 30 points with him healthy.
Well, that's what
I'm
saying.
If Jaden's healthy and starting a game and ends the game, I expect them to score right around 30 points.
Well, they scored 28.5.
That's my expectation.
I mean, that's a lot of points.
There's room
it's
for
a lot of
more.
Points, especially if you look at the schedule.
He did it last year with 28.5 with a bunch of clowns around him.
I understand.
For the most part.
He could take a small step back, and he also is playing a tougher schedule.
Okay. But again, that doesn't shift my expectation for this offense to keep humming and score around 30 points per game.
Should,
I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation.
No, it's not. Tress Way barely was punting. I'm looking at his career punts. Mm-hmm. Now, his career high for a season was 83 punts, but there were plenty of seasons where he was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I'm counting at least 6 seasons where he was in the 70s for punts. A couple of seasons where he was in the 80s. Last year at 50. In a season that's one game longer.
Mm-hmm.
You're focused on the defense forcing punts. Washington barely punts.
Well, it's because we score.
They go for it on fourth down a lot.
At an insane rate on fourth downs.
I'm telling you right now, and you can make fun of me, I'm taking for granted our offense this year.
Yeah,
I think you should.
I'm taking it for granted.
I'm not taking
for granted the defense.
No.
But
let me say this about the fourth down.
You can still have a great offensive year and not score 30 points a game.
True.
You can still score 4 touchdowns a game
Yes.
Or around there and be a really good offense.
Sure.
Doesn't mean you have to elevate it to 30, 31 points. It's a lot of points.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, the Eagles won the Super Bowl and they didn't score, I think they were right around 27.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't score as much as Washington. And I can't remember who we had on the other day kind of said, you know, the that brought up the factor that they, depending on the defense, you can end up scoring less because you had the ball less, whatever.
Mm-hmm. What I mentioned.
But I think it's going to be tough for defenses to stop Washington. Defenses couldn't stop Washington last year, and you add Debo to the mix. And I think they were very intentional on that first play giving the reverse to Debo because they want teams to think about it. And they're going to run fakes.
Oh, they're going to run,
so many things off
Debo's
of that.
Debo's going to be in motion all the time. Yes. Just trying to throw off the defense.
Those linebackers are going to be figuring out where Debo is at all times. Safeties and might free up Terry even more.
You know, everybody assumes that the Kroski Merritt development or whatever, or blossoming sort of in camp, is why they felt they were the need to go ahead and move on from B-Rob.
Yeah.
It might have just been acquiring Debo. Even though he's not going to, you know, carry it 15 times a game, he just gives them that extra punch, and then they can get the other stuff from the other guys.
Yeah, the addition of Debo, and that, you know, Jaden's going to carry the ball a certain number of times. It takes stress off of your running back room.
B-Rob said he was surprised. You see his little presser in San Francisco?
I saw it. I didn't click on it.
I just read about it.
I saw it.
I just saw like a 10-second clip.
Well, I'm sure he was surprised when he got pulled for practice or whatever, and they told him they were going to, you know, probably make a move.
Yeah.
I guess I just got frustrated with this style of running.
I was surprised. Ben Standig, you were right. I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to DQ, it's some of those pressers there, they basically decided in the offseason that this was a possibility, that they were going to have an opportunity with the depth in their running back room to move on. Listen, I wish him best. Yeah, I hope
he does well.
I think he tried his best. I think he did, you know, did a lot of good things for us. Just, you know, they wanted a little bit more.
He was a good guest on the show until he fumbled twice in the Philly game. And then then he fumbled his phone and was unable to call us the next day.
He actually told me, I don't know if I told you guys. So for my book, Faith Restored, faithrestoredbook.com, I interviewed B-Rob out at minicamp, and he pretty much just said he didn't feel like calling in after the bad game.
I, you know what?
We knew that.
He just said,
I don't blame
him. He said, I wasn't feeling it.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, I said something like, really appreciated having you on. It was fun. Maybe we can do it again, which clearly is not going to happen.
Right.
And he's like, my bad in the end. I just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah.
How many weeks did he miss? Two?
It was just kind of like down the stretch. It just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Last three or four games.
I was going to say three. Yeah, maybe three or four.
But he said kind of once he was injured. Mm-hmm. He didn't say because of the fumbles. He just said once he was injured.
Right. Mm. Well, I think we're in a great position. I feel so much better than I did the last few weeks. Last few weeks, I was really starting to get panicky, reading about the terrible offense, getting Terry back, seeing Jaden run around, you know, in week two was helpful. Now let's just focus on the defense and find a way. Honestly, any win over the Giants is going to be a good win. I don't need style points. I don't need it.
10-9's a good win.
Any win. Just get the W.
Get that dub.
You got to stack dubs.
Put it in the column.
Yeah.
All right. If you want to text us throughout the show, you can do that on the Junkies text line. It's brought to you by Main Street Bank. Cheer local. Bank local. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender.
NFC East order of finish. So it goes without saying, here's your odds. Most likely the Eagles finish one, Commanders finish two, and then the Cowboys and Giants in that order round things out. Plus 325 over at FanDuel right now. If Washington overtakes Philly and then it's chalk the rest of the way, Cowboys, Giants, that's the second most likely thing to happen. And then you'd have the Eagles and Washington with the Giants and Cowboys flip-flopping as the third most likely thing. But I thought we could just go through this right now and see what do we think the order of finish is, and is it going to be chalky? Because it's very rare. It's so, so hard going into a season with four teams to forecast the correct order of finish. If you try at about a 20-some percent clip, you're probably going to hit it. Right now, it feels like there's tiers and there's gaps. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is easy in the East. Eagles a little better than Washington. Washington's better than Dallas. Giants are the worst team. But you know, Danny, if they play this thing out 50 times, it goes that way on a computer like 19 times.
Yeah.
There's again, just so much variance.
This division doesn't have back-to-back winners. Even when Philadelphia's been good consistently, Dallas has jumped up and had a 12-win season to their 11. Again, they didn't win the division back-to-back, Philadelphia didn't. I mean, because Dallas jumped up, I think it was 2023, the year started to run together with a 12-win season. So they won it. I'm telling you, it's not always chalky, to your point.
I believe that both Philly and Washington come back to the pack some. I don't think the Eagles coming off of a Super Bowl, it's just normal and natural, are going to be as hungry and, you know, that things are going to fall the way that they did to the extent that it happened last year. That's just how it goes. It's really hard to go back-to-back. It's really hard to still have that dog in you when you've been celebrating and having parties all off season long. But I do feel better about Nick Sirianni than I have. I mean, I've joked about him for a while. He's earned it now. This is a good, high-end, quality coach. But they have a brand-new offensive coordinator. They have promoted from within. The last time they did this, they went with Brian Johnson, and the bottom fell out offensively. When they've gone and gotten really decent, formidable, proven OCs from outside the building, like Kellen Clemens, they've actually been great. You know, Shane Steichen, it went really, really well. Those guys get head coaching jobs, and then they go to Brian Johnson. Now it's this Kevin Betullo guy that they're promoting. What if you have another year where Sirianni's got to step in and start helping you, like happened with Brian Johnson? You know, that was a very, very different operation on offense. I love Vic Fangio on defense. I think they've got overall a good coaching staff. But that's one area where nobody's really talking about them losing something. Could the Kellen Clemens OC loss, now in New Orleans as the head coach, be a big deal? The other thing is, they lost way more on defense than we've talked about.
That's right.
There's just a lot of starters that are gone. This is a very, very, very different team. So we just go, oh, well, they still have the great offensive line. It's not as good as it was last year. Oh, well, they still got the great skill group. True, but the defense, the O-line, they have taken steps back.
Yeah, and some of the names that you've gotten used to that are really good that are still there. I mean, we saw how good Quinyon Mitchell was firsthand. Cooper DeJean was there, and he was outstanding. And, you know, Jordan Davis is a absolute house up front. Jalen Carter's a grown man. They still have a bunch of pieces that are problems for you. But again, defensively, as you said, there's been a lot of turnover. Zach Bond, who had a great year last year, is back. But there is a bunch of turnover. You look at the offensive coordinator position, etc. A couple times they probably got away with things where, again, just naturally you come back to the pack. They're still the best team on paper. This isn't knocking them. The schedule, I think, you know, for a Super Bowl champion works in their favor. They're going to play the Rams in week number 3, for example. Who knows what Matt Stafford is like, if he'll be healthier as the season goes, if not. I mean, how could you sort of account for some of those things? But Cowboys, Chiefs, Rams, Buccaneers, Broncos, a bunch of playoff teams out of the gate there.
Who do you think they missed the most of the departures this year?
Milton Williams is the first name that jumped to mind for me.
Gotta be him.
That's the first one.
To me, he's the best player they lost. He got $26 million a year, I think it was, from New England. And it's a big list, by the way. I don't know if we rattled off all the names yet, but Josh Sweat on the D-line has been very good at times for them. Milton Williams was hugely impactful. Darius Slay in the secondary. C.J. Gardner-Johnson is one of my least favorite players in the league.
But he's so fun.
I'd imagine he's one of those guys, if he's on your team, that you like him, but he is just a awful, awful dude to have to play against, and just seems like a guy that I don't have a whole lot in common with. Brandon Graham, defensive lineman, retired. Oren Burks, Kenneth Gainwell, all gone as well. Offensive tackle, Mekhi Becton, a little bit of a liability in pass pro at times, but he's a road grader in the run game that they used some last year. Like, that's a lot. We just went through how many names. You know, offensive coordinator Kellen Moore to the Saints. Safety James Bradbury, now gone, had been in the mix for them the last couple of years. So it's a huge turnover. And you just hear, well, the Eagles, they're really good. This is a different team.
Yeah, I still think they're very good. I mean, you two bookend tackles that are as good as anybody's combo in the league. You're still centered around Barkley with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and old pal Jahan Dotson, a juggernaut there. I'm, of course, kidding about the last one.
Go back, though. You just talked about Barkley. Here's another thing we should bring up. There's no chance he repeats last year.
No.
Zero. It's irreplicable. It cannot happen. He's not going for 2,000 yards. He's not touching the ball 400 times again. There's a better chance he plays in like 7 games after the workload last season. What if he does miss a lot of time? Will Shipley and A.J. Dillon, the quad father? That's the running back room? I'm just saying there's a path to the Eagles being more of a 9-win team than like a 12 or 13-win team that I think is a much better possibility than people think. I think they're the best team in the East. I'm picking them to win the division.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea that they're head and shoulders better than everybody else, or there's just no way they come back to the pack, I don't believe it. And a lot of that just comes from, I think, Barkley, after last year, will not play more than probably a dozen or so games.
Yeah, and last year they were incredible, is the other part. Like, they were 14-3, a buzzsaw from wire to wire. At their worst, what were they? The second or third best team in the league, played their best football in January, had the extra lumber they had to lay in the playoffs, et cetera. It's not unreasonable that if you drop off three games, you're still excellent, right? An 11-6 team. Is that crazy that they could do that this year? 12-5, et cetera? So, yeah, I mean, we talk about them and Kansas City in the same breath. You could, quote, fall back to the pack a little bit, still be the first place team in the division, still be really good, still be a top two or three seed coming to the postseason.
So you have Philly one.
Yep.
You have Washington two.
I do. It's boring, but I do.
I do too. I mean, I'm chalk. I have the Cowboys third and then the Giants fourth. If something happens that is not that predicted for in that order, what changes? Is it Washington winning? Is it Dallas overtaking the Commanders?
What's the most likely?
The Giants not being in last place and maybe Dallas is?
The most likely thing to me would be Dallas sneaking up and maybe being ahead of Washington, whether it's via tiebreaker or, you know, maybe a game ahead.
They better get Micah Parsons on.
And that's of course, the variable. That's the variable, is that one. But again, like the this George Pickens thing eventually is incendiary and blows up, but it's also, I like their schedule. I mean, they got Giants, they got the Bears, they got the Jets, they've got the Cardinals, they've got the Raiders, they've got enough cupcakes on their shedge where you could see them harvesting a couple nuts, go 3-3 in the division. Next thing you know, that's 9 or 10 wins.
I mean, almost all the teams you said are the divisional opponents that everyone in the East plays, in fairness. So, like, you know, the Eagles and the Commanders get a lot of those teams too,
mm-hmm.
because that's the one cupcake in the West, the one cupcake in the North, or whatever. But I get your point. Like, there are soft games there. You got to win the games you're supposed to win, and now you find a way to get them to 9 or 10 wins. The thing that I am not picking to happen, but if you told me right now, with the four that we think in the order that we have them, we get one thing wrong, I'll say the Giants finished third, and the Cowboys finished last. And the way this would happen is they trade Micah Parsons, which is both literally and figuratively
on the table as of today.
Well, not just that, but yeah. Them kind of admitting
mm-hmm.
it's not about this season right now. And if they were to do that between now and Thursday Night Football when they open against the Eagles, I could see that meaning they're a game or two worse, and a 9-win team just became like 7-10, or an 8-win team, if that's what it was going to be, just is now 6. And I think the Giants are not as bad as everybody thinks.
This is my running thing.
Eventually, we're going to see Jackson Dart, and based on the preseason, I can't wait for that. He looks like he can play. But Malik Nabers is a star at wide receiver. They brought back Darius Slayton on a new deal. They still have Wandell Robinson. Even if Jalen Hyatt is a bust and never does anything, the former third-round pick a couple years ago, that's still a receiver room that's got enough talent for Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston early this season to put up some points. I love Tyrone Tracy. Fumbled too much last year. That was kind of the knock. But he's an athletic dual threat. He can catch the ball as well. Remember, Devin Singletary's there, the former Texan. They drafted Cam Scataboo in the fourth round. That's a good running back room. And I now pivot to the defense, where they might have the best defense in the division. In fact, I'd be surprised if they didn't. It'd be a problem for them if they didn't. Abdul Carter added to a defensive front of pass rushers with the best D-tackle in the league, not named Chris Jones, Dexter Lawrence, with Brian Burns on the edge, with still even other talent, you know, that can get to the quarterback. They drafted a third-rounder on the D-line in Darius Alexander. They've got another 2-6-7 sack guys, probably. I think the Giants' defense will be good enough to be a floor raiser.
So even if it's not Jackson Dart at some point, which is kind of the other, the lever that can be pulled or thing to dangle if the season isn't going particularly well for Brian Daboll and company, everyone loves to beat up on Russell Wilson, which I understand, right? He's corny. He's kind of a punchline at this point. Everyone thinks that time in Denver was such a disaster that he can't even tie his own shoes. Last year, I remember he started 11 games. He was basically on pace for 3,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 9 picks. I'm not telling you that's numbers to write home about. What I am telling you is
Indianapolis Colts Carson Wentz numbers.
Yeah, what I am telling you is a little stability right there with a defense that's pretty good, a couple really good receivers. Again, I'm not telling you that's the division champion or they're going to the postseason or they're doing anything special this year. I'm telling you that doesn't stink. And they stunk. They have stunk and been stinky for a long time. They're now in the, I'm not sure I'm excited to play them range. Like, they could jump up and get me that day, a Russell Wilson moon ball to Malik Nabers late or something, right? You think of a play or two to be made. He is not the guy that he was. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not the guy that was on his way to the Hall of Fame with his start in Seattle, quite frankly. I know he ain't. He's now kind of a little bit Alex Smithian, a little bit of check down, a little bit of take care of the football, a little bit just okay. That's good for what this group is right now.
See, I'm in team Russell Wilson's not good camp. I'm the people you're talking to. I think if he improved this year, he could be Alex Smith.
Whoa.
Last year, seriously, the numbers you read off, yeah. That is a defense, run the ball, special teams, don't beat us, build this thing out of trading cards operation. This, I joked, but this is Carson Wentz leaving Indianapolis, which was a pretty good insulated situation. Mm-hmm. Situation. Remember, he was like 4-1 touchdown to pick.
Yeah,
I think it was like 27 tutties and 7 picks.
Uh-huh.
Like, people were citing his numbers all offseason. Like, he almost threw for 4,000 yards and only threw 7 interceptions. That was him with the Steelers. And now he came to Washington in a much worse situation, and you get exposed. That is what I think is going to happen with Russell Wilson. I would be playing Jackson Dart against Washington. I would just play that guy. He showed that the lights aren't too bright. I'm not telling you that the preseason means a ton,
mm-hmm.
but there's just a bar you have to clear for me to feel like you're athletic enough and can process quickly enough for me to throw you out there in the regular season and know it's not going to do damage to your development. And he cleared that bar with ease in the preseason.
As a quick side, I would too, because I don't do this. I don't do the Carson Wentz tier. I don't do the leftover on your fourth or fifth team caretaker thing. I go all in. Am I young or am I not? I don't care what my record is, but these guys that are trying to survive and keep their jobs, they do. And NFL teams love trotting out journeymen at quarterback.
D. Wood, what is the ceiling for this Commanders team?
Super Bowl. Super Bowl is on the table for the Washington Commanders, and primarily because of their quarterback. I think Jaden Daniels is going to be a superstar in this league. We saw what he did in his rookie year. It was an unprecedented rookie year by, you know, rookie quarterback. And so when you have him as a centerpiece, they've upgraded the offensive line, obviously trading for Laramie Tunsil being one of the pieces. You trade for Deebo Samuel, another piece added to that offensive side. And now you're talking about better protection, better run game, more explosiveness on the perimeter. And it all adds up to the Washington Commanders being one of these teams that we're going to talk about in the NFC representing that conference.
Damian Woody earlier this morning on the Greenberg Show on ESPN, Get Up. I was on a radio show this morning, the one that Denton is a part of now on BetQL, and I was asked by one of the hosts, what is the best case for Washington in 2025? And I said, the Super Bowl. Am I nuts? What is the team's best case season in 2025? 301-230-0980. I basically said almost verbatim what Damian Woody said. They've got the best quarterback in the conference. They've upgraded their offensive line. They've added another major weapon offensively in Deebo Samuel. And it's year two in Cliff Kingsbury's system. I think Washington could be as dynamic as any team offensively in the league. I think at times they were last year. We know what the mystery is. Sean Springs seems pretty confident about the defense this year. If the defense is just improved, doesn't even have to be significantly improved, if it's just better than it was last year, I think they've got a shot to win double-digit games and win 2-3 playoff games and be in the Super Bowl representing the NFC. I think that's the best case. We can talk about worst case next week in sort of a best case, worst case record segment in terms of projected records. But for me, I think the best case is Super Bowl. Anytime you've got the best quarterback, you've got a chance to win a lot of games. And I think they've got the best quarterback. 301-230-0980. By the way, Diana Russini reporting that Washington is gauging interest in a potential trade scenario for cornerback Noah Igbinoghani. Interesting. They must feel really good about corners to be moving him. He's been a player that has played well for them, certainly in the slot. plenty of other cuts happening. Jalen Holmes released, according to Keim. It's also KJ Osborne, we had mentioned earlier. Let me just give you the updated list before we. Bobby Price was cut earlier. Chris Moore, wide receiver. Duke Riley, the linebacker, cut. We'll keep you posted on cuts.
Foster Sorrell.
He's cut. You'll update the cut list in your next What's Trending, right?
That's right.
Okay. So stay tuned for that. 301-230-0980. Am I nuts to say the best case scenario is Washington representing the NFC in the Super Bowl? Kevin in Arlington, go ahead.
Thanks, Kevin, for taking my call. No, sure. You're not nuts at all. I am. But I just want to sort of zero in on some specifics about how I see what you said. To me, for best case, we have to beat the bully in our backyard. We have to beat the Eagles on the way. What I mean is, if we don't face them in the postseason, let's say they play someone else and get upset, and somehow we go from the NFC Championship into the Super Bowl, that's fantastic, of course. But for me personally, I need to know they're no longer our daddy. We can beat them on the way to a Super Bowl championship. And honestly, I feel like it will take a lot out of us to do that. And I just can't imagine in my wildest dreams us winning the Super Bowl this season. But hey, man, bring it on. I would love it. I just feel like we're too thin. We're just too thin because of Ron and Marty and leaving us nothing. And we're going to have some injuries. We're going to have some, you know, challenges. But I could see us getting the Super Bowl. I just don't know that we can win it this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I should have added that I think to get there, I think they're dangerous in the postseason, even if they're not the number one seed, even if they don't have home field advantage. You know, I'll take our guy on the road in a playoff game after what I saw with what we believe to be a better supporting cast. But the best way to make the Super Bowl is to play two games at home. And to do that, they have to not only win the division, they've got to end up with the best record in the NFC. But at the very least, they need to win the division to ensure a home game or two. And that is typically a requirement. It's hard to win three straight on the road to get there. And that would be the concern, too, you know, is getting by the Eagles and ensuring, by the way, Kevin, that you get to the point late in the season that those two games against Philadelphia on December 20th and then on January 3rd or whatever that is, that they are meaningful football games. I would have loved to have played Philadelphia in one game much earlier in the season, but yeah, I'm with you. You got to kind of you have to end up with more wins or the tiebreaker advantage over the Eagles in the division to give you your best chance.
One other thing, just to mention again, it's a scenario planning here, but let's say we get to that game, the first of the two, late in the season, and we win the first one. Well, let's say Philly's been kicking everybody's, you know what. And that we get to the last game, and Philly doesn't need it. Like, Philly, we need it, let's say, but they don't need it. And we get a win, but it's sort of an asterisk win because Philly sat starters, whatever. I could see that happening, which would then set up, you know, a very interesting third meeting whenever it could potentially happen in the postseason. So,
we're really getting ahead of ourselves, but I like the way you're thinking, because one of the reasons that I hated the two out of the last three is there is a good chance the last one won't mean anything. And,
that's what I mean,
you know, and I would have liked to have seen two heavyweight, you know, highly anticipated regular season matchups. But we might get it.
If this is anything like the 91 season, we might get two amazing pre-playoff games. And that would just, the networks will love us if that's the case.
Yeah. Thanks, as always. Tom, I mentioned on a radio show this morning as a guest, when asked what is the best case scenario for Washington this year, I said Super Bowl. It seemed to take the hosts aback a little bit. Am I nuts? What's the best case for this upcoming season?
The best case
is a Super Bowl appearance. And I think that even better than that is a Super Bowl win, which we are capable of doing.
Yeah, you get to the game, you got to get to it, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, there's a Super Bowl appearance. But it really depends on how that defensive backfield works. If Lattimore comes back, then we have a shot. People forget that the year the Rams put the greatest show on turf, there was one team that beat them. It was Redskins. And there was a reason why. That was the reason why, was because we had three cover cornerbacks. That's the one year that
we didn't beat the greatest show on turf during their Super Bowl year. We beat them the next year.
Yes, we did.
No.
Are you sure?
I will look it up. I will look it up. They went 13-3 in their season with Kurt Warner starting for Trent Green when they won the Super Bowl. We almost played him in the NFC Championship game because we lost to Tampa. But Jeff George beat him on Monday Night Football, but I think that was in the 2000 season. It was the 2000 season. I'm trying to see. No, we didn't play him in 99. We did not play him in 99, okay, the year they won it. We did play him the next year, and that's where Jeff George got the start Monday Night Football and played the only decent game that he played for us, and we beat him on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, but look at our defensive backfield. It was
right.
Champ.
Yep, it was definitely Champ.
Darryl,
it would have been who else?
Champ, Darryl Green.
Right.
And Deion
Carrier. Was Carrier the safety?
Nope, Deion Sanders.
Yeah, Deion. Deion was, Deion and Champ. And Darryl Green, obviously, yes. Yeah, in 2000, okay, when we beat the Rams, that's right. Champ and Deion out there. Yes, so you're saying you like the chances of winning the Super Bowl because you love what we have at cover corner.
If Lattimore comes back, yes.
Well, and hopefully you get the Marshawn Lattimore that they traded for. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Everybody stay on hold. I said earlier on a radio show today that the best case for our team here is Super Bowl, that they can represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. Am I nuts? What do you think the best case for Washington is in 2025? Your calls next on that. We'll keep you posted on the cuts. And we will keep you posted if any information breaks specific to the Terry McLaurin details of the contract. What typically happens, as Michael Jannetty explained to us, is once the deal gets signed, then it gets reported to the league, and that's when you get the leak of the entire deal, not just one side of it. We'll see what we get probably before the day is over, maybe tomorrow. But team is continuing to cut players to get down to 53, and Max will have the update of those on the list throughout the show. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. We mentioned it earlier. The Washington Commanders are the oldest team in the NFL. How troubling is this to you as a Commanders fan? If you look at this graph, I mean, the Packers are the youngest team in the NFL. Their average age is slightly over 25. Eagles are second. Their average age is 25.49. The Commanders' average age, it's significantly higher than most of the teams in the NFL at 28. Most of the teams fall in the 26 to 27 range. And Washington is just slightly over 28. 1-800-636-1067. Does this worry you? Now, some of these guys are key players. They brought in veterans last year. It was a plan by Adam Peters and Dan Quinn to bring in veterans who were leaders who were still producing.
Yep.
Bobby Wagner, Zach Ertz, Austin Eckler.
Right.
They've decided to keep Josh Johnson, so he brings up that average age a little bit. They brought in Von Miller this year. He brings up that average age a little bit. Do you have a problem with this approach, and does it worry you?
I don't have a problem with it, but just don't be surprised if these guys start showing signs of their age. I mean, Debo isn't quite to that age yet, but he's coming off a season where he was hampered by a lot of injuries. Hopefully that's something that doesn't rear its head again in 2025. But I'm not going to be stunned if Bobby Wagner picks up some sort of small injury or Austin Eckler. Let's hope he can dodge the concussion, you know, the thing that he had to deal with last year. Like, I will not be surprised if an older roster starts showing signs of wear and tear.
Much like fantasy football, right, where it's not necessarily your draft or your opening day roster. It's how you manage it throughout the season.
Yeah.
That'll be the key for the Commanders.
I think Peters is going to have his hands full doing that throughout this campaign.
They'll have to be keenly aware of what's out there, of where they stand with injuries, key pickups here and there. That's going to be part of the deal.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys may not be on the roster next year, some of the older guys, but we'll see. Doesn't overly concern me, but the fact that the depth really showed some signs of an inability to stop teams, especially on the defensive side in preseason. So if some of these guys, these starters, get banged up, that could be
an issue. They even have an old kicker. Matt Gay's 31.
Yeah.
What will overly concern me is if Jaden Daniels gets hurt.
That's the number one thing that will overly concern me. So the previous oldest teams that this guy, Jimmy Kempsky, has been calculating, he said he's been doing it since 2012. So 13 years.
Yeah, how's the oldest team fare?
The previous two oldest teams were the 2023 Saints and the 2018 Raiders, average age of 27.4. So they're significantly older.
Did it say what those records were?
I'd have to go look at it.
I'd have to go back and look.
2023 Saints, I'm guessing not great.
And 2018 Raiders, probably not very good. I mean, the Raiders haven't been good for a while. The Saints were 9-8 that year.
Okay.
In 23.
And the 2018 Raiders were 4-12.
800-636-1067. As a fan, are you concerned? And we, by the way, we knew that they were an old team.
Yes. Maybe, this is not news.
Maybe didn't know they were the oldest in the league, but they are. But does it concern you for this year?
You know, Tunsil's older.
Well,
Debo, you mentioned, is at 29. McLaurin is going to turn 30 this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not too bad. The big ones, though, like Josh Johnson, I mean, in a perfect world, he's not going to play.
No. If he does, you're in trouble.
Right. Von Miller, I mean, he's going to have a role on this team, but he's probably going to play a third of the snaps.
But maybe it does tell you that, and I'm sure that this is what they're going to try to do, is you need an infusion of youth. You need an infusion of young talent.
Right. When Ron Rivera destroyed the roster, that's why you have an old roster now, because you don't have those young draft picks that are cheap labor for your team and are younger players.
Yeah,
that's what Adam Peters has been forced to do. He's been forced to plug the holes with older veteran players.
I mean,
blame Ron Rivera.
At the receiver position, you've got young guys that are backups. Who knows how much they'll play?
Mm-hmm.
So your starters are older. Offensive line, you got a couple young guys, right? Because you got Coleman, you've got Connerly. Running back, if Bill is the guy, he's obviously very young, right?
Rodriguez is young.
Secondary has got at least two or three really young guys. Linebackers are older, but the backups, you know, we question the depth there. Got a couple young guys. So there is some youth mixed in there. It's just most of the starters are older.
All right, 800-636-1067. If you want to chime in, Cakes, play some music, man. We're freaking getting fired up for week one.
Here's a tweet from E. Phillips. He says, no, average age means nothing as long as the talent level keeps moving in the right direction. On paper, this is a better team than last year's squad. That's literally all that matters. All right, I agree with that to an extent. And we talked about this earlier. It's just one little goofy metric, but they used to have one guy in the top 100, and now they've got five in the NFL PA's top 100.
All right, let's go to Toothpick. Calling from Texas. Toothpick, what's up, buddy? You're all the Junkies.
Hey, what's good? The room that concerns me most often is the linebackers.
Yeah.
With the malice that Bobby has on them and Von Miller's age as well, and the pass rush that he's expected to bring, other than that, the people behind them, I don't have too much faith in. But like you say, you're not a name until you make your name. So we'll see what Jordan McGee can do, and we'll go from there. But still worried about the pass rush.
Well, I mean, the problem.
Appreciate y'all taking my call, man.
Thanks, too. Thanks, buddy. The problem with Jordan McGee is he's young and he's banged up all the time. that's not a great combination for him. He's had a hard time staying on the field. Like, he's 24 or 25 and he can't stay on the field.
Right.
That's an issue. Like, you expect your older guys to miss some time. You don't really expect the guys who are in their physical prime, 24 to 26. Like, you expect those guys to generally be available.
Of the older guys that they're really counting on, Ertz, probably Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner.
He's a massive piece to the defense.
By far, they're way up there, and they got big roles.
Right.
Let's go to Mike in Ashburn. Mike, what's up, buddy? You're on with the Junkies.
What's up, guys? What's up, Vish? Mikey, what's going on?
What's up, Mike?
I think I don't think this was the plan originally. I think he wanted to plug a few holes last year, and then they went on that great run. And I think if we would have been under 500 team or wouldn't have made the playoffs, he would have made more of a youth movement this year. But I think they had no choice but to do that because they got Jaden from another year in this contract, and they figured, let's get the best players we can get no matter the age and see if we make one more run at the Super Bowl. Next year, if they don't do that, then I think they'll clean house and get back to some more of a youthful team. That's my thoughts.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about sort of like just the five receivers, you know, potentially shopping Noah I? How comfortable are you with the current 53?
I think they're going to be fine. I think they have enough depth there. I know McCaffrey hasn't done much, but he also hadn't gotten much opportunity since the first few weeks of the season, which I don't know what the reason is, maybe. But I think they're going to be fine in that role. I do think they have to pick up another guy today for sure, just to solidify it. But I think all in all, I think he did a good job at the roster, and I don't think it's done by any means. I still think there'll be a few moves made to make them a little bit better. But we are what we are, right? Let's see what we got.
All right, Mike C., we'll talk to you, bro.
All right, thank you, buddy.
Mike C.'s son played football at Richmond.
Nice.
I think he was a linebacker.
You could hear that little southern twang that he had. I don't know. I noticed something there.
I think he's from here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It is what it is. They inherited kind of a banged-up roster they didn't love, and so it's going to take a couple years to get it maybe to where you want it to be, maybe middle of the pack.
But it is a lot better. It's improving. I mean, last year when we started talking about this team, I remember you in particular talking about all the holes in the roster.
Yeah.
And they've plugged some of those holes. It's not a perfect roster. It's far from perfect.
Yeah.
But they've plugged a lot of holes. They've addressed it. They've upgraded the talent. They've upgraded it in the secondary big time with young players in Amos and Sandstrom. You know, they've upgraded at wide receiver now with a veteran in Debo. They've upgraded that offensive line both via the draft and via
a trade. If Noah Brown stays healthy, where do you put our triumvirate of receivers? Noah Brown, Terry, and Debo.
As far as ranking in
middle
the league?
Of the pack? Middle of the pack for the rest of the league?
Maybe kinda bottom of the upper third.
It kind of depends on 20th, Debo.
Somewhere in that range.
Depends on Debo.
I mean, if you get Debo, just, you know, solid Debo.
Yeah, middle of the pack.
I'm just not sold on Noah Brown. I have a hard time thinking he's going to be able to play 12 or 14 games.
But when he does play, he's fairly effective.
He's fine. He's a good number three wide receiver.
They just
in the
don't
league.
Have that young stud. They had a younger guy who was 23, 24 that was a stud.
Yeah.
And then they'd be higher. But when they say the average, I mean, even though Debo has had some injuries, I just don't think 29 is old.
Well,
I just don't think, I don't see that as being.
He's approaching old. He's not old yet, but he's approaching.
I think 33, 34 is
Noah Brown's sneaky old, too. He's 29.
Yeah.
Like, he's not young.
Yeah, but that's like the back end of your prime.
Agreed.
For sure.
But again, he seems to be injury prone. I'm talking about Noah Brown.
Yeah.
Like, they're keeping him in bubble wrap to get him ready for week one.
I don't know. In the clips I've seen of Debo, they look freaking exciting. Like, I think he looks incredible, the clips that we've seen.
Well, I hope we can replicate it week one and beyond.
And I have no idea how many touches he's going to get. What do you think he's going to get? Is he going to get 8 to 10 touches? That maybe is too much. Maybe three or four
probably
catches.
Probably just depends on the
runs.
Week.
He might only get five touches.
6 to 7 touches per game?
Yeah.
Somewhere in that neighborhood?
He's going to get at least three or four catches.
You would think.
And then he's going to get like an end around or something.
Maybe
and
two.
And a, 2 to 3 carries per
two
game?
2 to 3 carries.
Something in that range?
Yeah. And one or two of those are going to, he's going to knock over dudes.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you're going to stand up and scream in your living room.
You would think.
And he's going to fire the entire team up.
Mm-hmm.
1-800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. Are the Commanders too old?
I thought one of the most interesting answers we got from him was on coming to Washington and the fact that he wanted to be here. So the way that it worked, according to him, was he was allowed to seek a trade. He calls his agent and says, here are the 3 teams I want to play for. Let's work on this. One of those teams was the Commanders.
Very unusual for us.
You and I talk all the time about the possibility, now that you have Jaden Daniels in a front office that people respect, of becoming a destination city, of becoming a team that star players, this is a former All-Pro, this is a former Pro Bowler, this is a big name that a bunch of teams would have been curious to add on a cheap deal in the final year of a contract. That you're going to get phone calls from agents now saying, hey, we want to go there. And he explained why he wanted to come here. But this was Deebo Samuel on the show yesterday.
So me and my agent got on a call after John Lynch and the guys granted me permission to seek a trade. We got on a call and he asked me what my top 3 was, and Washington was one of the top 3. And, you know, me not even thinking at the time, just, you know, I was just in the motions of like naming like places where I wanted to go. Over here, they had a really, really good quarterback, just went to the NFC Championship. So like, you know what I'm saying? They're building something special here. So I was like, why not? And then my agent and Adam Peters got to talking, and then we got it done.
Deebo yesterday right here on The Fan. If you missed the interview, you could grab it at thefandc.com when we're done tonight. But isn't that all the evidence you need? Isn't that the proof of what we're talking about? When was the last time that a guy who has played in Pro Bowls and or been named a first-team All-Pro has become available via trade and has ranked the Commanders as one of the top 3 teams he would want to play for when he's seeking a trade?
You have to go back to the very beginning, honestly, of Snyder, when nobody knew that he was a disaster and the worst ever, and thank God he's gone.
They just knew he would give you all the money.
Well, yeah, when he was Daddy Warbucks, when it was a spare no expense, I can't wait to go down there, and he's assembling a super team coming off of 99, right? You remember the buzz and excitement. His first year as owner, they were better than they'd been basically for the previous decade. The 90s, after 91 and 92, and then Joe Gibbs' last year, were not very common. Wasn't very much fun. Offense in the sport, adding a bunch of stars, and you go, oh my God, we are the it team in the NFL. We are big back. And of course, it couldn't have gone worse.
This was more from Deebo on that subject in his next answer.
You know, they had, just like I just said, they came up NFC Championship. You know, we got a great quarterback, great team. Played against Cliff, he was the offensive coordinator over there. And the head coach over there with the Cardinals. And, like, you know, I'm not too far from home. Some of my family live in Baltimore. So it's like, oh, that plays a role for sure.
So I didn't realize the Baltimore part. That's kind of cool because you are right here with family. He went to South Carolina, was on this coast originally, not out west in San Francisco. So those things bode well. It seems to me like, as we talked more about Cliff in the conversation we had with him, that while he didn't use the word, like, admired him from afar, those games when you're playing against Arizona and you're seeing some of their scheme and
you
what they're doing.
You notice some stuff, yeah.
Exactly. I think there was an intrigue there, but he did not know Cliff well, which I'm a little surprised by. Like, Kingsbury has a really good relationship with Kyle, Sean McVay, all those guys are at his wedding a few years ago and, you know, whatever else, or at weddings together, all hanging out, sitting at the same table. I remember Peter Schrager doing a big segment where he posted a bunch of pictures of all the people he hung out with that day on Good Morning Football. Do you remember that bit?
Is that when he strained his back from all the names that he was carrying around that he dropped?
I mean, Peter Schrager was like, here I was with this person. Here I was with this person. And it's like, we get it, man. You were at a wedding with coaches. Like, did you want to tell us any more? Or we just see.
What was the playlist like?
I couldn't believe that was a segment on TV. I was like, this is a wacky.
What did they do for their first dance? Did they cut the cake?
But anyway, I think specific to Deebo that, like, I think he was a fan of Kingsbury's offense, even if he didn't know him really at all. But this is largely about Jaden Daniels and the fact that they got to the NFC Championship game last year, and he felt like they had a chance to get back there. Along these lines, did anybody see the comments from DeMarcus Lawrence,
I think it was,
of the Cowboys, who's now at Seattle? He did an interview with Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark, yep.
And that podcast, the Pivot or whatever it's called. Right? Is that right? Pivot? Yeah. So Clark was interviewing him, and he asked him about ending up in Seattle. And he said, look, I had some options. He name checks Washington straight up, which you and I remember when he became available said, this would be a guy that can rush the quarterback.
Look at that.
He's older. You want that? I don't like the fact that he's 32, but they don't have a problem with age. Why don't they consider paying this guy? And he basically said the Commanders came after him pretty hard, but he said, I didn't want to jump on the bandwagon with a team that's already really good. He said, they were in the NFC Championship game last year. I want to go somewhere where I can help build them up into something. Basically, I didn't want to just hop on in the last second for the team that's about to win the Super Bowl. That's how he was referring to the Washington Commanders, and his lack of interest was that he didn't want to be a bandwagon Johnny-come-lately, basically. What? That's what this is now?
Isn't that crazy?
You don't want to come here because they're already too good?
I don't want to go to some established program, which, by the way, we always underestimate that, right? Where the mentalities of certain guys, what they might want or not want. You know, I don't want to live in cold weather. I don't want to live. I want to live near someplace that has access to a winery. I mean, who knows what they want? But what a strange reason not to come someplace for a chance to win a championship. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. I'd rather build something else. But anyway, put that aside. But that's how he referred to Washington. That was so crazy for me to listen to and hear, where he's going, yeah, that's like as if to say, that's one of the established programs. Like, I'm not going to Baltimore or Kansas City or Buffalo or one of these teams that's ready-made for championship. No. They're too good. I want to go build something. Wait, what?
So this was the interview on The Pivot.
Had an opportunity to, you know, sign with Washington. And it was like, yeah, like, that's a championship contender team. And it's like, me personally, I'm not no bandwagon guy. You know, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, jump on the team because y'all have a good opportunity to go to the championship. It's more of like, well, what am I needed for? If y'all already got that type of team, like, y'all don't need me.
Now, we could debate whether or not that makes any sense. Because to me, I would be like, hey, you're about to win a title. I'm a pretty good player. Let me help you win a title.
You ever think about coming to win a title?
But I don't want to bury the lead of, he was like, yeah, that's a Super Bowl-ish team. I want to go somewhere where they're not a Super Bowl team to help them get there. They're just in that category for this player in the league.
Who's that's been the around, craziest part, man.
Who played them twice last year. Mike in D.C., you're on The Fan. How's it going?
It's going great. How about you?
Good, buddy.
All right, so when I was listening to what y'all were talking about, I remember two Hall of Famers that wanted to come to Washington, and the teams rejected the trade. One was Eric Dickerson back in the day, and the other was Reggie White back in the day. Now, you add Debo to what we're doing, I'm not 1,000% sure that he's going to make this offense prolific. I feel like he takes a lot of the attention off of the middle of the field because he can do a lot there.
Yep.
But, you know, I like his mindset. I'm not mad at it at all. I feel like this is the first time Terry really has a complimentary receiver that will take some attention off of him.
He's never had a player of this caliber, in my opinion, a weapon, I should say, of this caliber at receiver, you know, who can, to your point, help just take a little attention away. I think that's fair. And if it doesn't work, Debo gets hurt. Debo proves that last year's regression was actually him slowing down and not just an offseason. You know, however that happens, you just didn't give up much. It was a fifth-round pick, and it's below market for a player of his upside. The juice is worth the squeeze on paying him in the teens and $1 million against the cap.
If I give up a fifth-round pick and I get 800 total yards, pretty much what he did last year, okay.
In a bad year.
Yeah, sign me up immediately. Again, that to me is the floor. Right, is where last year wasn't very good for him. It's why San Francisco didn't mind parting. A fifth-round pick for that, for a team with some pretty high aspirations, is 100% worth it. So you don't have to look any further than that.